You're listening to Big Cast, your source for financial technology innovation with John Best.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Big Cast. My name is Glenn Sarvati on behalf of the Best Innovation Group, where we like to do things, cool things, I should say, with technology, financial technology for credit unions, banks, fintechs. And we like when they're doing it with each other as opposed to each other. And that's been kind of a recurring theme these days in terms of where the market's been moving. And we obviously are happy to see that. And we talk about it here every week with new content on Tuesdays. And here in the busy season, we've been doing it twice a week, double dip on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And just as it seemed like the conference season was coming to an end with Money 2020 at the end of October, had another really good one, and the benefit of not having to leave my hometown to go to it as well. The Bank Innovation Build Conference took place right here in Atlanta, Georgia, and got three, I think, really, really good interviews to share with you with three very interesting companies, all of them technically, well, I guess they're all banks, I guess you would say, and doing very innovative things in the space. And I mean, some people can maybe take issue or make a joke out of the fact that bank innovation back to back in a title of a conference could be something of an oxymoron. But clearly there are some very cool stuff going on here. We spoke with Judith Irwin, the CEO and the co-founder of Grasshopper Bank, which is just getting going in New York City. You'll hear more about that. Ryan Cook, who's the head of technology for N26, a very well-known, as they call them, challenger banks that started up in Berlin, Germany, is in 25 countries over in Europe and has made its entry into the U.S. market in August. And Cross River Bank, who's been very big on the open banking platform and taking a new approach to the U.S. banking market for some time, since their inception back in about 2008, I believe, spoke to their SVP of innovation, Jesse Honigberg, as well. So we'll get back to that. You can find us, as I said, every week. You can check us out at big-fintech.com. We've got show notes and all the past episodes there. And you can also find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, iTunes, wherever you pick up your podcasts. You will find The Big Cast. Make sure you use The, or else you get Shaq's, I think, obsolete at this point, kind of dormant old basketball podcast. But hopefully you'll track down The Big Cast, or you can, as I said, you can always find it there at big-fintech.com. I'll touch on a few other topics. And again, in the past, I've kind of made the point that it feels to me like most companies keep their big announcements to kind of ready to go and get the big splash by releasing them during the Money 2020 conference. Well, we've had a very, very busy week just this past week for things that came out after the fact. And at least one of them, two of them probably, I suspect they had no intention of them becoming big news, at least at this stage of the game. So, you know, not that they were doing counter-programming to Money 2020. The biggest one, well, I don't know if I'd say the biggest one anymore because they all wound up getting a lot of attention. Probably saw the kerfuffle over Apple Card and the issue around some intrinsic bias that may or may not be built into their decisioning models around credit limits. So there was some over the, I guess, two weekends ago by the time this is taking going to air. Some tech reporters noticed that there was a tendency for men to get higher credit limits assigned when they applied for the Apple Card than women. And then people chimed in, and no less an expert or authority than Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, said that he very specifically saw that with his own wife, even though they share all the same accounts, and he got a much higher credit limit offered to him. The thing I find particularly intriguing about this, and ever since they started doing the announcement, the promotion around Apple Card, it's just really kind of stuck out to me that the way they do the pitch is created by Apple, not a bank. All you got to do is look a little bit further on the details, and you know freeze your frame if you need to on your screen to take a look at the small print. I mean, everybody, I think, knows that anybody in the business knows that Goldman Sachs is standing behind the actual card loan portfolio. Green Dot Bank is also involved in it. So, you know, all you got to do is look at the fine print. And the absence of a bank is a definite overstatement. And I've suspected for quite a while, when something goes wrong, how quickly are those banks going to suddenly be brought a little bit more front and center and thrown under the bus? And I think that's exactly what we're seeing right now. Already, the Goldman Sachs name seems to suddenly be getting a lot more prominence now that we've got this issue around the credit limits and the potential AI bias. I thought, you know, I'm sure Apple's not exactly you know, happy with, may not be exchanging Christmas cards with Steve Wozniak this year, because he made the point that, you know, Goldman shouldn't be taking all the blame for this one. The way Apple's name is attached, that they need to be taking some responsibility for this as well. More to come, I'm sure. Investigations have been opened. Lashes will be applied at some point. We'll continue to follow up on that one. Probably the announcement that got the least play this week was the new Facebook pay functionality announced by Facebook. Again, they went to pains to point out that it is totally separate from anything that goes on with Libra. It runs across existing payments infrastructure. And they're partnering with Stripe and PayPal to make this happen, among other players. Again, intriguing that PayPal just broke away and left the Libra coalition, but they're still working with them on this. First rolling out in the U.S. on Facebook and Messenger. It's going to be available a little bit later, as no specific dates, but Instagram and WhatsApp are certainly on the roadmap as well. So we'll be watching that one. It looks like it's more of a front-ending of existing payment solutions, as we mentioned, but the idea being that you don't have to switch out apps to make payments. You can do them right resident within where you're at, which is generally the way the market has been moving for some time. And then the other one that I think is getting even more attention, and I'm suspecting wasn't really intended to come out this week, but the news, I think, leaked along the way, that Google is going into the checking account business through their Google Pay functionality. They are talking about partnering with banks and credit unions to offer checking accounts online only, resident within Google Pay. They've actually set up, I'm not sure if formally have crafted partnerships yet, but they've it's been publicly reported that they are going to be working with Citibank and then Stanford Federal Credit Union as well as their initial entrees, but it looks like there's going to be other banks being brought on board along the way. Details still relatively scant on that one. It is intended to be an online-only account, as I understand it. So, and the banks, once you go in, you need to enroll through Google to have, and this is all in the future. This is not available today. They're looking at a mid-2020 launch. The idea being the application process takes place within the Google Pay app. You can then choose your financial institution from within there that you want to affiliate with. So again, it does not appear Google is looking to become an actual licensed bank financial institution. And then there will be the opportunity to get a physical debit card, which would then be another way to actually work through the account. A lot more to come on that. My friend Lou Grilli, who's a frequent contributor to this podcast, made the comment that he thought it was interesting that there's a credit union on the ground right from the start. And he was, we were just kind of speculating on exactly what that meant. My gut says that, for one thing, maybe they want to avoid looking like they're only playing with the big banks, which is what it would look like if their only partner were Citibank. My suspicion is that it's not the credit union that is the real key piece of that. It's the Stanford piece of the credit union that they're working with. Obviously, Stanford's right down the road from Google headquarters. I wouldn't be surprised at all if there's some interlinking relationships between those two, and probably a really nice testbed opportunity for them to understand how this all plays out by working directly with a smaller institution on the ground right near them, with probably some people who speak the same language as them. A lot more to come on that. No reason to get into too much detail right now, because frankly, the information available is still relatively scant. So we'll obviously be following that one as we go on. Let me do a little bit more kind of paid political announcements before we get into the heavy content of the episode. We've said it before, we'll say it again. CUVoiceRegistry.com is the place you should go and take a look. If you're a credit union, and even if you're not in the voice business today in terms of offering voice assistant, you're going to want to at some point in the future, and you're going to want to have your name reserved so you have the ability to call your commands based on the way you want your credit union referenced. This is a place where you can stake your claim and have your name set aside for your reserved for your future rights or your current rights if you're ready to go. And by popular demand, a new site that also does the same for banks, FIVoiceRegistry.com. Check them out, courtesy of your friends at the Best Innovation Group. Also, a new call, the Best Innovation Group has been running a very effective innovation club for some time, a convening mechanism for like-minded credit unions to get together and kind of work through some ideas with a little bit more critical mass around ways they can bring new interesting products to market. BIG, Best Innovation Group, is now looking to actually expand that idea and setting up basically a second club. There's enough interest that we're looking to put together a new cohort. So if you would, I'll post a link to the website again, but if you go out to big-fintech.com, click on the consulting link, and then there is a whole section on the Innovation Club. You can find out more about it, and you can apply and see if it's something that might be of interest to your credit union. I think it's definitely worth at least a look, and then you can decide for yourself from there. But I know a lot of really good stuff has come out of there. So on with the program. As I said, best bank innovation build. Really good conference. Now, a relatively small group. It was in the, I think, about 120 to 150 range, someplace in there. But the one thing that I was very, very impressed by is, unlike most of the conferences these days, by show of hands when somebody asked, at least two-thirds of the audience were bankers. And that is not something you see very much these days. So often it's people from other walks of life, the fintech providers, the challengers, et cetera, et cetera. It was really good to see people who were in the banks having these conversations. And I think, it's not that we only want to be talking to bankers, but if they're not at the table, you're not going to get that same perspective that's important in these conversations. And I thought that was refreshing. And for that reason in itself, I thought it was a valuable conference, along with the fact that they brought in some really, really good speakers. And I was very pleased and appreciative of the Bank Innovation people for helping me track down a few of them so we could have these conversations. The very first panel they did, and I had actually seen Judith Irwin at Money 2020 speak as well, and I already knew I'd be tracking her down in Atlanta, and was happy to find a quiet corner after her presentation and talk about Grasshopper Bank, her latest venture, and a really interesting one, just getting off the ground right now, coming out of stealth mode, based in New York City. And let's just let Judith tell you about it right now. Glenn Sarvati at the end of day one of Bank Innovation Build here in Atlanta, Georgia, with Judith Irwin, who I also saw speak, I guess it was just last week, at Money 2020, and purposely waited until I figured it would be a little more peaceful here outside of the 10,000 plus people out there. Judith, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for talking.
So you are the founder and CEO of Grasshopper Bank, which I think people can be forgiven if they don't necessarily know the name yet, because you're just coming kind of out of stealth mode, out of the shadows. Right now you're in beta?
That's correct. And actually, the only web presence you'll see from us is a landing page.
It's only friendlies right now.
That's
you're working
right.
with friends and family.
Exactly. We have a waiting list. So what our landing page shows is if you want a job or if you want to go on our waiting list. That's pretty much our only web presence right now.
But what's really interesting to me, a couple of things about them. First off, you're the first newly chartered OCC bank in the Northeast since the financial crisis.
That's right.
And just to make life more difficult, you didn't do it in a very traditional fashion. You're a venture-banked group. You are a pure de novo in that you built your entire technology stack. You're not just plugging into an existing platform.
That's right. We used Temenos as our core, which is a software license,
yes.
which we purchased and have been integrating into what we call the Hopper. It mm-hmm. is our proprietary front end that sits in Amazon. We built the middleware between the two, and it's in an open API architecture.
And one of the things that I thought was really interesting you made a comment about today is when you talk about open API architecture, that you are going to be a best of breed, so you have to be able to integrate these partners, but as you put it, you have to be able to disintegrate these
Correct.
Partners as well, because
Correct.
You never know which things are going to work.
That's right, and some of the risks, so we work with some very early companies, or companies that have ultimately get acquired,
mm-hmm.
and so that creates risk for Grasshopper if we are working with a vendor who gets acquired by a competitor or someone who wants to sunset that product for their own reasons. We need to be able to unplug that vendor and add a new one in, or just because something better comes along for our clients.
Mm-hmm. And you never know exactly how the market's going to evolve along those lines.
It's changing every day.
So you've got both the incredible benefit of building from scratch, but all the hair on fire kind of aspects that come with that too.
That's
now,
correct.
The one thing we haven't mentioned is one of the kind of differentiating factors for Grasshopper is you are the only digital-only business bank.
That's right.
And can you talk a bit about your target customer base?
Sure. So we are focused on the innovation ecosystem, which in the old days, it was classified as venture banking, and for those companies who will receive or have received venture, as well as their venture investors. But we also want to bank entrepreneurs in the innovation space who have bootstrapped their companies. Only 0.25% of all businesses ever get venture. Mm-hmm. So to restrict yourself to just that one little space is pretty narrow. And so we think, and they're also a high bar for what they expect from their bank as well.
And again, the way you came about this is you were part of a prior venture, Square One, if you can say.
Correct.
Again, this is kind of a bit of a twist on that model where kind of learning by doing and finding a different market.
That's right. So 2005, we formed Square One Bank, and it was a pure play venture bank. It was based in North Carolina, actually, and was largely a virtual bank with the one branch there, but not based on any technological innovation, just a straightforward bank, bought, you know, the bank in a box.
Mm-hmm.
What I learned both there and my prior job is venture banking actually becomes very difficult to scale past about $2 billion in loan outstandings because it requires minute-to-minute monitoring of these companies. The largest repayment source if you're lending to them is the cash that they have or an incoming round. And so knowing every minute what's going on with that cash is critical.
So this becomes an AI play in terms
Absolutely.
Of exactly some of this back, the technologies you're putting in.
That's right, as well as providing financial intelligence. So a lot of these companies are not founded by people with a lot of financial savvy.
Mm-hmm.
They're technologists, they're marketing people, product people. And so we want to bring them their own data and broader data to help them make better capital decisions for their business.
And again, you did not come at this from the banking side. You are more from the venture side yourself, correct?
Well, I've been in banking for 35 years,
okay.
but 25 years of that have been in this little venture banking world.
Got it.
Since
which is
the late 90s.
Pretty specialized.
Yes.
So one of the things you also talked about, again, with the benefit of starting from scratch, you know, you're looking forward because obviously you're building this company to last, and you're saying, you know, you need to really be thinking about what the entrepreneur is going to look like 20 years from now.
Exactly. The and every time new innovation happens, the bar goes up for everybody. And so being nimble and ready to react quickly to changes in demand by your clients is really important. That requires that you have a nimble platform as well.
Now, I guess the other, you know, we're at a bank innovation conference, and you know, some people might say oxymoron when you put those two words together. And one of the things we talked about is, you know, the regulatory aspects of doing something as outside the box as you're doing. I know you had the challenge of raising money, getting the license approval. Can you say a bit about what that trial looked
like? Yeah, it was interesting being the first. We were not only the first bank approved by the OCC, we were the first application that the Northeast office had
even received.
So they hadn't even said no. And so there were very few people in licensing or supervision that had even looked at a new application ever in
wow.
their life. So there was learning on both sides. And we brought venture banking, which is a very, though it's a seasoned business model, only a handful of banks have ever really worked in that space. So limited expertise. And then finally, the digital side of the house. Many of their policies, so there's a, I'm going to forget what it stands for, but FFIEC,
yes,
which
Federal
rules,
Financial Institutions Examination Council.
That's
yes.
right. So cybersecurity, all the technology is examined. But some of the guidance was written in the mid-aughts. And you can't, it's difficult to take guidance written in 2005
apply it
to 2019 technology. So that was a very carefully coordinated dance with a lot of education on both sides. And the regulators worked really hard to get this done, but it took a really long time.
18 months,
18
I think you said? And you
got
your license about what?
April 30th.
Of this year.
Of this year.
But you've already been working for some time before that based on seed capital, maybe another 2 years before that
That's
on the
right.
actual technology?
That's right. Early. I hired my first employee in January of 2017, and then from there we built our first prototype by the summer of that year around online account opening, but we were off and running.
And it sounds like the lessons learned from a regulatory communication standpoint is engage early and often? Is that
That's
a fair
exactly
statement?
Right, and be completely transparent. There's not a lot of motivation for regulators to take on risk.
I jotted down that note. I thought the way you put that there's no benefit to them from incrementally increasing risk.
That's correct. And so you have to really view them as important stakeholders in accepting what we're doing, help advising us, and keeping them very informed, both the good and the bad.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it was that temptation of just kind of like, okay, don't pay attention. But yeah, better off letting them know up front, rather than once they discover it, they'll dig to see what else is there.
Well, bankers don't like surprises. Right. Regulators are 10
Even
times.
Less.
Yes.
So it's a little bit different than a usual conversation I have, where I usually say, if people want to find out more, how do they get in touch? As you say, you basically have a placeholder page out there.
That's right.
Do you have a social media presence, or how are you going to market?
So we have a LinkedIn page. We have a landing site, grasshopper.bank.
Where's the name come from, by the way?
It was in homage to Rear Admiral Grace Hopper.
Ah, okay.
She was a pioneer, a woman in the 60s and 70s in the military, who was part of the team that developed the first computer language, which was COBOL.
Interesting. Which is still in use.
That's
in many
right.
Banks.
It's still in the basement of a lot of banks. And so it was really an admiration of a true pioneer. And the also really shied away from a geographically tied name. The New York, we had a placeholder called New York Venture Bank, and while we're based there, we're a national bank. And then finally, something that would resonate to the digital entrepreneur.
Next generation, yeah.
That's right.
And leapfrogging ahead.
Exactly. Though what we like to say is grasshoppers are physically unable to jump backwards or sideways, only forward.
Okay, well, this is what a great note to end on. So it's grasshopper.bank, and that's the best way to find out.
That's right.
Well, wonderful. Judith Irwin, CEO and founder of Grasshopper Bank. I'll definitely be paying attention to see where this leads.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you.
So thanks to Judith for taking the time, and certainly we'll be watching, and as it fully emerges from stealth mode, we'll be giving updates on exactly how that's playing out. I'm sure you've all heard of N26, and you're probably aware that the Challenger Bank had entered the New York, not New York, they're based in New York here in as far as a U.S. operation, but the U.S. market entry took place in August. Ryan Cook was another presenter panelist at Bank Innovation Build. He is the head of U.S. technology, and based on my experience of this trip, he spends an awful lot of time on airplanes going back and forth and creating the collaboration and the glue between the U.S. operation and the home base. And as you'll hear, we caught up with him in Barcelona. I talked to him briefly at the conference, and then he wound up catching an earlier flight, and we missed our opportunity to speak on site, but he was gracious enough to get back together a couple days later by Skype and captured this interview. So have a listen. Glenn Sarvati here with Ryan Cook, the head of U.S. technology for N26, who's actually speaking to us right now from the Barcelona. That's your kind of main site for development world headquarters. Is that correct, Ryan?
Thanks, Glenn. This is one of our tech hubs. We have a few in Europe, our headquarters being in Berlin. And we've also recently opened up a hub in Vienna where we're staffing up.
Okay. And I think our listeners are probably familiar with N26, but just to be safe, 26 countries, the bank, I think, commonly referred to in the European and UK market as a challenger bank, as they've come to be known, active right now in 26 countries with 3.5 million plus users, and launched here in the United States for the first time just in this past August, a little over 2 months ago. So saw Ryan say some very interesting things back on stage at Bank Innovation just last week, and he was gracious enough. I know he had to leave pretty quickly afterwards, but he was willing to catch up via Skype to have this conversation.
So, absolutely. Ryan, thanks for having me.
So, Ryan, how long has the U.S. Operation, your U.S. base is in New York. You've got, around 70 people there or so. How long has that group been in place, and how long has the U.S. launch been underway?
Sure. We've been working on the U.S. for a while. I think the first people on the ground were in the fall of 2017, and we had Nick, our CEO, come over from Europe. He'd been involved with the company for quite a long time, from when it was very, very in its infancy in Europe, and he came to kind of kick off the effort and ended up hiring a few individuals. I had the opportunity to join a little over a year ago in the spring of 2018, and the mandate was we need to kind of build out a technology a team and a product team in New York to help assist with the launch to the U.S.
Now, your background, I believe I saw you came from Stanford. Are you from the tech world, the banking world? What was your experience prior to N26?
No, I'm all tech. This is all tech, a all new the ground time. For me. That's right. You know, I started as a coder in a small startup in San Mateo, California, after studying computer science at Stanford. And I've been working in a variety of startups since then. This is my first kind of foray into the fintech. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot to learn.
So in terms of approaching the U.S. market, I think it's to some extent, obviously the U.S. tends to be fairly unique from a payment standpoint and a banking standpoint for that matter. How did you think about things differently than the 26 countries? And maybe that's not a fair statement. The 26 countries may all be different the way you approach them outside the U.S. as well. But what was unique about this specific market launch?
Yeah, I think, you know, we do see market variations in the EU and among the many countries we serve there. But the U.S. is definitely something new for the company. And, you know, we were kind of the first foray into a vision for the company today to become a global consumer finance brand. And so, you know, the U.S. market, we acknowledge, has a lot of different people. There's a lot of different types of consumers and different types of customers in the U.S. alone, just given its size and variation. And so, you know, we felt that a lot of the core value that N26 offers its customers everywhere, which is, you know, making complex banking tasks very easy, we felt that that is kind of a universal benefit. And you know, despite how people pay for things, you know, at the end of the day, almost everyone needs to pay their rent, pay their bills, and collect money from a paycheck or from their peers. And those are kind of the basic things that N26 makes extremely simple. And we put all of those capabilities into your pocket. Obviously, we've built a lot of really cool, innovative features on top of that, but that kind of common thread that runs between kind of banking worldwide, we felt like we had tapped to pretty successfully in the EU, and we wanted to see if we could replicate that success elsewhere.
Well, this is probably a pretty good place to add into the mix that you mentioned just before we started recording. I did not know where the name N26 came from, and that actually seems to play pretty well into the complexity of the banking world, as you just mentioned. You want to share that story?
Sure. So the name N26 is inspired by a Rubik's Cube. So there's 26 sides to a Rubik's Cube, and or smaller cubes in the Rubik's Cube. It should be accurate here since it's a number. And, you know, we wanted to kind of take the analogy that if you know the right moves, you can solve a Rubik's Cube very quickly. And, you know, people compete around this. And so we wanted to kind of use that analogy to complex banking problems. And it kind of acknowledges the fact that things we think should be basic and easy and you're capable to do from your phone in your home were challenging for a lot of people. And we wanted to bring all that together.
So to what extent do you think your brand equity kind of preceded you? I don't want to make an overstatement of the case, but I'm kind of thought of the way Spotify made its name and people were, you know, really chomping at the bit, really excited when it finally came to the U.S. I mean, I think N26 is a much better known brand if based on the time that I've spent over in the EU and the UK over the last couple of years. Do you think there was a fairly good groundswell of people that were waiting for you to come here, or did you find that you had to kind of build the brand from ground zero?
We definitely found people that are familiar, and you know, whether it's going to a conference and hearing from people who had been customers when they had spent time in Europe or were familiar, you know, with us from kind of our growth in Europe. And so that's definitely an advantage, and we really appreciate that, you know, the people that love to use the product in Europe before we were launched in the U.S. were really eager to use it again here for the U.S.
It never hurts to have evangelists. So you're a little bit more than 2 months in. Any kind of lessons learned, surprises? Just kind of give a quick update of where you stand right now.
Well, I think we've seen a lot of strong growth, and that's kind of when you're bringing something that you know is somewhat new to a market. We definitely appreciate seeing some really strong growth numbers. You know, I think we're, you know, what we launched into the market was a basic debit account, and it comes with a debit card. And we're very quickly adding additional capabilities to our product. So we launched a no-fee ATM network a few weeks after our public launch. And we've just also recently added kind of a top-up feature that lets you fund your account with a debit card. So, you know, we really see one of our other advantages to be taking a very iterative approach. We want to listen to our customers and see what their pain points are and be just consistently delivering new value through product development.
Got it. So again, I referred to N26 before, at least being known in the European market as a challenger bank. And you pointed out that it is one of the unique features you've got here in the States is you are not a bank. You actually work in partnership with a bank. I don't know if that's true if you're a bank in all the other countries that you do business, but maybe clarify, you know, some of the things that that brings to the table that may be somewhat different.
Sure. I think, you know, we do have a banking license to operate in most of the jurisdictions of the EU, and that allowed us to kind of expand through a lot of those countries. And you said 26 countries. We were able to kind of make a big jump there once that license was secured. You know, when we approached the U.S. market, I think because we did want to launch early and engage with our customers early in the life cycle of having a product live in the market, you know, we were able to accomplish that by partnering with a bank. And so we have Axos Bank as our partner, and they've been really great in helping us, you know, think about a lot of the, you know, fiduciary responsibilities of being a regulated entity. And, you know, because we can now get a product out to the market quickly, it gives us a customer base we can engage with and really see how a future product development is resonates with them. I think one of the you know, core DNA of N26 everywhere we operate is that we are very customer focused and very product focused, and we want to believe that, you know, we're delivering value that's demonstrated through people using our products. And the best way to see that is by talking to them. And so we're able to do that because we have quite a strong early and fast growing user base here.
Anything in terms of open banking? I'm just thinking that most of the countries you're operating in are in more of an open banking based environment with no such legislation in place here in the States. Does that change the way you approach things?
Honestly, not so much. So we really we have a similar ideals to open banking around kind of making things very easy and transparent. Getting things very quickly in terms of money movement and really pushing the standards for security. And so we think, you know, those are some of the core thesis to the directive, and we really embrace those. I think where people look at some of these with skepticism is, well, if you make it really simple for people to kind of move or switch where their money is, maybe they'll flee your product, yeah, and you won't want that. But, you know, again, it kind of ties into how we really want to be demonstrating value to our customers. That's how we make the majority of our revenue, is through people using our card and our products. And so, you know, by, you know, forcing us to be constantly focused on delivering value, we feel very strongly that, you know, we're not going to see a big negative attrition just from embracing open standards. So we're very happy to be participating in those. You know, we're eager to see those adopted by other locations and jurisdictions like the U.S. And, you know, we really celebrate a lot of the potential for more partnerships and products to be built on top of these directives.
Cool. So if anybody wants to find, I'm sure people will want to find out more, both from two perspectives, as a potential customer of N26 and then also as a professional in the space who want to just understand more about what you've got going on. What's the best place? Is it all the same website, or what would you suggest people do to kind of get to the next level of detail?
Yeah, N26.com is a great place to start. We've got a Twitter feed as well, N26US. You can find N26 in the App Store. There's only one of us, and it's a very easy, simple way to get started with an account.
What about anybody who wants, are there like investor relations or anything like that? Or people want to kind of dig in deeper just from a, you know, like I say, an insider standpoint of understanding what you're all about strategically?
Absolutely. You can find all of that information on the website. And we've got a great PR team that's very responsive.
Wonderful. Again, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's already getting fairly late in the day out in Barcelona, so thanks for making time in your schedule. Ryan Cook, the head of U.S. technology for N26. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Glenn.
So thanks again to Ryan Cook. Again, that's one of the leading lights in the quote-unquote challenger bank space, N26. And again, I'm sure as the U.S. operation, it's extremely, you know, nascent at this point, but be very interesting to see how that one plays. And I'm sure it'll wind up at the top of the league tables very quickly in terms of, subscriber base and activity as far as the non-traditional banks in the U.S. So definitely worth watching. And then another bank that you hear a lot about, and it was the first time I believe I've actually ever seen them on stage, is Cross River Bank. Based in New Jersey, kind of the suburban New York stretch. And again, a new model to banking that really takes the open banking, open platform, banking as a service approach. I think to one of the I don't want to say extremes because that sounds bad, but they've really taken it to heart and embraced it and brought it to market in a really effective way. Jesse Honigberg's relatively new with the organization, but had a ton of great energy and ideas, was already in the space at Sterling Commerce, and again, tracked him down, and he was more than happy to share some thoughts and also some additional research and thought leadership papers he was aware of, and we've got the links to those as well. But here's my interview with Jesse.
Glenn Cervati here at the Bank Innovation Conference with the smooth jazz in the background and the dulcet tones of Jesse Honigberg of Cross River Bank, the SVP of Product and Innovation. Just did a really good presentation. I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with Cross River Bank, but can you just explain, obviously, punching above your weight of $2 billion in assets, I think is a fair way of saying it.
Certainly. So Cross River is we like to think of ourselves as the preeminent API or banking as a service bank. Really, our claim to fame is we built our own core, and we're using that pretty significant technology investment to really out-innovate and differentiate ourselves among a pretty crowded space. And really, we think about our goal is to provide services, innovation, extensibility, and flexibility to everyone through startups, through enterprises, and get them direct access to the banking technology.
Even in the audience today, if several people, you built your own core? I mean, that's quite an undertaking.
We joke, not me personally, right?
But I mean, that's quite an undertaking. You don't find too many banks. But again, your point being that this is what was really demanded by some of your customers, to provide the services you wanted.
And I think that, it's absolutely an evolution of what you do, right? So you started, I think the core journey for us really started by saying we wanted to do ACH better.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we do ACH better?
So you didn't wake up one morning and say, we're going to build a core.
No.
You built ACH.
We
and
built ACH.
Little by little.
And then said, well, you know what? In order to have ACH work really well, it would be great to have a really flexible ledgering and sub-ledgering system. And so that got built. And then we said, well, now that we have this really flexible ledgering and sub-ledgering system, it'd be great to have wires.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said, well, what's the right way to do wires? And so if you looked at our API documentation, you would see that the way that you send a wire in actually creates a virtual warehouse for you, right? The way you send an ACH in creates a virtual warehouse for you. You don't need to worry about NACHA files or, an M802 file, whatever.
Oh, now we're really getting into it.
Exactly. But, for us, it's really about how do we enable our partners to get things done quickly?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we build a suite of APIs and technologies that do that?
Now, the interesting part to me, which I did not know until this morning, is your origins, because you're fairly new to the organization, but Cross River Bank was actually a community institution of roughly $200 million
sure.
And kind of pivoted into this new space kind of post-financial crisis, is that
yeah,
what I heard?
Yeah, so founded in, and all this is on our website,
yeah.
So you can get the in-depth story there, but founded in 2008. So right in the middle of the financial crisis.
That was the foundation of the bank.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's not like a legacy bank that's been around forever.
Okay. Founded, chartered in 2008.
But not built with this banking as a service concept. Nobody is thinking about banking
and
as a service.
And so really evolved into it, right? Mm-hmm. So started serving marketplace lending, then saw opportunities to build efficiencies around payments, what that meant for building a core, and kind of continued to build and expand on it. And importantly, we still have, Fiserv as a partner.
Yeah.
Right? And we use them for certain legacy platforms. But for us, it's the true innovation happens by enabling our clients to understand what the power of possible is. And for them to say, well, what would we love to do? We have this great UI UX idea. We have this tremendously disruptive financial services idea or lending idea. Can we do it? can you enable us? You know, how do you not only bring the technology, but how do you bring the compliance? How do you bring the know-how?
That's definitely part of the platform too, right? The compliance aspect.
100%.
Well, and you mentioned also, I mean, when you think about your clients, you don't think of your primary competitors as being banks, right?
No.
You're thinking about the service providers.
100%. And I think that for us, the service providers we work with in some regards, but you know, it's really our competitors are people who really try to repackage services. And so when you're repackaging services, you often run into what are you repackaging? So if you're repackaging a legacy platform, you're still going to be inherently limited by whatever the legacy mm-hmm. platform has to mm-hmm. offer. But we really think where we're differentiated is by having this kind of brand new core at the heart of it. We're really limited more around, you know, what's our development timelines and what can yeah. we get to market and how do we build relevance and awareness than any true, like, well, the legacy platform says we can't do this or that. And,
but even then, it sounds like you're more, I don't know, I want to say a tech company, but your headcount, entire bank, $2 billion bank, your headcount's 300, I think you said, right?
Just over 300.
And it's a pretty small number, but you said, what, 65 are in the development shop, which from a proportional standpoint is massive. So you can really iterate a lot more than a lot of banks typically.
100%. And you know, that's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that everyone who's listening and says, oh, I wish I had 65 developers, be careful what you ask for. but net-net, it really allows us to unlock what's possible. And so we don't look at problems saying, well, what is the FIS timeline for delivering that? It's what is the addressable market for delivering that? And will we be able to expand it so that we can meet the market and deliver something that's compellingly better than what's out there?
Well, that was another point you made that I thought was really cool was, you know, it's sometimes you have to challenge yourself not to just jump to building yourself. Mm-hmm. Is it going to make it a demonstrable difference mm-hmm. in terms of what's out there in the market
today?
And
that's the hardest thing, right? You know, when you have, and I think that's a double-edged sword. So for your community bank people who are listening, they're frustrated by the FISs and the Fiservs and the Jack Henrys and, you know, how they repackage innovation for you. And they tell you, well, you'll be innovative by buying our service bus. And, you know, I'd argue that's not the case.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you need to think about what your clients want, where they're going, and how you think about what your legacy vendors provide you as part of that journey and how you can own the delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Because clients are not going to care that FIS or Fiserv or Jack Henry missed their deadline. They're going to care that you did.
Yeah, good point.
And so you ultimately own the delivery and the execution, and you need to make sure you set yourself up for success because that's the only thing your clients are going to be measuring.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of innovation and kind of repackaging, you know, processes that are already out there, RTP,
mm-hmm.
the clearinghouse, you mentioned you're going to be, I believe, almost by the time this airs, early December, you're going to be
yep.
live on RTP.
That's the plan.
And you will be by far the smallest bank on the network at this point.
100%.
Right?
So I think that I think that BB&T is the smallest today, but now that they're coming with SunTrust, you know, they're
but massive. even by BB&T standards,
yeah, we're a fraction of BB&T. So,
but again, because you're providing this platform, again, I'm going to use the phrase punching above your weight. You're going to create a conduit through which a lot of other folks can really jump in.
And that's the hope, right? You know, our plan, working collaboratively with TCH on this, is to figure out, you know, can we figure out a way to get the RTP receive functionality to a larger community of banks without needing a core integration. So there's more to come on that if TCH lets us do it. We think it'll be a very exciting and innovative thing. But you know, it's really combining a bunch of the services that we have.
But you've really, I mean, obviously you've identified that, particularly for your client base, which is primarily a business-to-business need,
correct.
Right? I mean, that is definitely someplace where you see.
Okay. It's huge. I think that the other thing that you know, I want your listeners to understand is like, so I started the bank in June
mm-hmm.
and that...
Again, you came from a banking background.
I came from a traditional commercial banking background, was CDO at Sterling, Chief Digital Officer at Sterling. But what was really interesting was that my first project that got handed to me was RTP. And you think about, so I started June 17th, we're going live December 2nd.
And it was like pretty much getting started then? Wow.
Kicked it off, had the initial call.
Boy,
right?
That's an endorsement of you and TCH.
But that's an endorsement of my team, first
yeah,
of all,
right?
But more importantly, that's an endorsement of what happens when you have direct access to the tech stack, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm running a real-time core because I built a real-time core,
yeah.
right? I don't need to worry about outage windows, how I'm dealing with offline modes, things like that. And so when I think about how I'm enabling partners and how we're exposing the APIs for RTP, and you know that's all in our documentation right now, it's really, you know, what's the power possible, right? What do you want to do?
Yeah.
How do you want to fundamentally change your business? What could R2 be doing for you, for your customers, potentially for their customers, and how do we be part of that journey?
Well, one last thing, and you just touched on in terms of making a point of saying testament to your team. You talked a bit, because part of the presentation you just gave is more how do you make this happen in the real world, and you really kind of cautioned against the hero motivation, the hero 100%. Culture. You can't disregard the people who are just getting stuff done in the background. I think that was kind of a key point, the way you approached it. You've got a big team that made this happen.
There's a fantastic article for any of your, or a paper written by Professor Nelson at MIT that kind of cautions on the tipping point of firefighting and how you think about firefighters and what they do for your organization and how it makes it very hard to get things done if you don't have a cohort of people who are getting their work done and doing the right thing. I'd urge everyone to read it. It's about a 7-page paper, and it'll really make you think two or three times around the type of people you have in your organization and the way you execute, and that you absolutely need everyone to be working towards the same goals, and you need to make sure that you're rewarding not just the ones who come in and save the day, but the ones who work diligently every day to make sure the data seems to be saved.
The blocking and tackling, the offensive linemen.
Exactly. Yeah. Great analogy.
Jesse, great stuff. If people want to find out more about Cross River or the stuff you've got going on,
CrossRiver.com. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn. And certainly, if anybody has any further questions, feel free to reach out to me. First initial, last name, so jhoenigberg@crossriver.com. And happy to answer any questions.
Great. Jesse Hoenigberg, thanks so much.
Pleasure to be here.
So there you have it. Three, I think, great perspectives from three of the non-traditional banks that I think are really doing some fascinating stuff in the U.S. space right now. Grasshopper Bank, N26, and Cross River Bank. If you go to the website, big-fintech.com, you will find links to their sites if you want to find out more about them. Please do get in touch if you have any feedback on the episode, any further questions. We can certainly follow up. You can do that again on the site. Would love you to rate the podcast wherever you picked it up, on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, etc. Send me a message directly. Again, my name is Glenn Sarvati. You can find me on Twitter at 154advisors. You can find the Best Innovation Group, the host of this podcast, big-fintech.com, or on Twitter at BigFintech. I believe we're going to be back again on Thursday because we're still running heavy with lots of busy, good topical information. And why let it sit on the shelf before we give it to you? So let's keep rolling those out there. So check in again on Thursday for new content, and then every Tuesday going forward, you will have new and the latest data and thought leadership in the fintech space. So hope you'll check in regularly. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
Got a question or want to join the conversation? We'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at Big Fintech, email us at info@big-fintech.com, or visit our show notes and comments at www.bigfintechmedia.com.